All right, welcome into the Fan pregame. SportsCenter, Sportsnet 590, the Fan for the next hour. Lots has already started. The trade deadline is tomorrow or the next day, but it feels like it's today, right? Feels like it's been today. Lots of action tonight, including Leafs and Sabres after us at 7 p.m. across the network. We'll also have it on SportsNet 590, the Fan. Lots to go through. We will break down some trades, but we got a couple other things to do on our one-hour show.
Before we go full hockey here, it is Fight Week, UFC 299, Saturday night banger fight card. We will connect with Aaron Bronstetter from Miami, Mr.
305.
To tee up the card tomorrow.
He didn't laugh. As I said, Leafs tonight, the second half of our show, we're going to have Andrew Raycroft on, of course, former NHLer. We'll break down a little bit of Bruins related because we're getting bookended by two Bruins games, but Sabres tonight. So we'll go through some goaltending dilemmas and obviously the Boston Bruins with him. But Sabres tonight, Leafs have not fared well against them. We'll break that all down with him.
Best bets in 20 minutes or so before Molson Leafs hockey. And if there are any trades, we will let you know. But let's go through what we've seen already today.
Okay. Most recently, it was a trade between the Rangers and the Kraken. Alex Wenberg over with a second, a conditional fourth, 50% salary retention. That was the most recent of trades. Casey Mittelstadt and Bowen Byram switching teams there with Colorado and Buffalo. Though that one's obviously interesting specifically because we're seeing Buffalo tonight. But, you know, two young studs kind of swapping teams on that one. Mm-hmm. Sean Walker, former York Simcoe Express, Keswick kid. I had to make sure I said that. And a fifth to Colorado as well from Philadelphia for Ryan Johansson. And a first, Edmonton grabs Adam Henrique, Sam Carrick, and a seventh. And Anaheim gets a first so far, really. Mm-hmm. Salary retention at 50% and a conditional pick. And then a little bit earlier in the day, Vladimir Tarasenko to Florida. And they just keep getting better for a third, a conditional fourth, and 50% salary retention. Lots still to come, but that's a pretty good start for Wednesday.
Yeah, it's a pretty busy Wednesday in the NHL, and that's the one, the Vladimir Tarasenko deal, that I think is most interesting to me, because when I first saw it, I'm like, really? That's the move? Vladimir Tarasenko? He's not the Tarasenko of 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago winning Stanley Cup with the St. Louis Blues. But then I guess I was a little bit wrong, because I looked at his last three seasons. 33rd in points per 60 minutes, same production rate as Sebastian Aho, goal scoring 66, which matches Alex DeBrincat. So he's in pretty good company. But this does drop when you just look at the last 2 years when he's been moving around a little bit. 84th in total production, 129th in goal scoring. So the nomad lifestyle for Vladdy has not really looked good on him. But here's the thing. Everyone thrives with the Florida Panthers,
I know,
right?
He's going to
look every
good.
Single player that goes to Florida is suddenly better than they were. Matthew Tkachuk becomes a Hart Trophy candidate. Brandon Montour, Evan Rodriguez, Sam Bennett is far better player now in Florida than he was in Calgary. Oliver Ekman-Larsson was a lost cause. Now he's a productive guy. Nick Cousins, Carter Verhaeghe, the list goes on. It just seems like everyone who ends up in Florida just plays better than they were at a previous stop. So I think the best team, at least for me, in the Eastern Conference was Florida. And with this, they get a little bit more dangerous.
Yeah, you look at the teams that have already made moves and we're still a day or 2 days away from the trade deadline. The Rangers, who are, you know, top of their class as well. Colorado, who want to be cup contenders and will have some maybe some best bets about cashing in on them early here. Edmonton, of course, a team that, you know, came from the bottom of the NHL and are working their way up here, seem to be a contender. And Florida, like those are basically the top echelon or want to be the top echelon of the league. Vancouver Canucks, you're up next in a sense. Stars did something a little earlier, but you're looking at the big guys making moves, and this is already a Wednesday night. Kind of feels like the temperature's heating up for some other teams and maybe the one that we'll see later on the network tonight.
Yeah, we definitely need something to kickstart things, right? Like, apparently Pittsburgh Penguins want to get Gensel done today. And we talked about him being a domino yesterday. But if main players in the Stanley Cup chase are making moves, well, it puts a little bit of pressure on the other ones and gets the market going. So this deadline might be saved after all.
I also forgot the Vegas Golden Knights did get Anthony Mantha yesterday. Mm-hmm. I believe it was late last night. So another top tier-ish team, a wannabe at least, adding some muscle themselves. We'll have lots of NHL trade talk to come. Of course, the next 2 days will be jam-packed. Friday, we'll have a full day across the network for you. But we will pivot to Mr. 305, Aaron Bronstetter, joining us from Miami. You look great. I need a fit like this. You got to get our style team on us because you look like you live in Miami.
I'm like the Daniel Day-Lewis of reporters here. It's method acting. You know, you got to really dive into your roles when they're assigned to you.
Yeah, well, we look like we're living in winter and cold and pale compared. So we'll try to live vicariously through you. Okay, so a big one this weekend, one that we've had circled, one of the best cars that we've seen in a little while here. Let's start with the main event. Sean O'Malley defending his title for the first time against the only guy to have beaten him so far. It seems like if you put together a wish list for main events, Bad Blood, a perfect championship kind of fight recipe between these two seems to be the thing we're going to see on Saturday night.
Yeah, it does check a lot of the boxes. Mm-hmm. And one that is worth mentioning is for a first title defense for Sean O'Malley, regardless of the Bad Blood and the history between these two, I still think this is a phenomenal challenge for him in his first title defense, because Chito Vera has never been stopped in a fight. I mean, this is like we're talking 20 plus UFC fights for Chito Vera, never been stopped in a fight. It's going to be a 5-round fight. So I think that Chito Vera is going to be in his face for as long as this fight lasts. We've seen the fact that Chito Vera is the only person that has defeated Sean O'Malley. He was able to kick his perennial nerve in their last fight, and basically he got something called drop foot. So he wasn't able to put any weight on his foot whatsoever. Ends up falling to the ground. Chito Vera finishes the job. Sean O'Malley says he thinks it's a fluke that that happened altogether, and he doesn't even consider that a loss. But, you know, if you ask people in MMA, obviously it is a loss, and I think that this is going to be a chance for retribution for Sean O'Malley, and it seems like everybody was kind of at the right place at the right time for this one to come together.
Yeah, it is the perfect matchup, history notwithstanding, right? Because you got a sniper in Sean O'Malley, and you got a guy who's never been knocked down, let alone finished, in Chito Vera. So a really good main event. But if not that the UFC would have its druthers or whatever, but Sugar Sean O'Malley is a big deal for the UFC. He is one of the most marketable guys. He might be the most marketable guy in the UFC. What does the UFC have in him? Is this like on the path towards McGregor? Is it unlikely that he gets to that level, but he's still of utmost importance? Like, where do you rate him in terms of, you know, key athletes for the UFC to build around?
I think he has all of the ingredients of a big star. When you look at what he brings to the table, you've got the fact that he is charismatic, that he's authentic, and then, of course, is the finishing power. When you have that sort of finishing power, you're always able to draw the respect of your contemporaries and of the fans. And I think that what Sean O'Malley brings to the table are all of those different things that make a superstar. And I guess we'll see exactly how much he gets the rub from the fans this Saturday, because we're in Miami, basically going to be a sold-out event. And I think that this is an opportunity for him to shine on a big stage.
And it's not like the moment is fleeting, but we might not know who's next definitively. But we know Merab Dvalishvili is hanging around. He might be making weight in order to be a sub. But either way, it seems like he can't avoid Merab forever. And if we're talking about kryptonite for Sean O'Malley potentially in Chito Vera, who can't get knocked out, I mean, Merab might be the actual kryptonite, because he's this Energizer Bunny sort of wrestler who might not stop through 5 rounds and could win a decision against O'Malley, who might be needing the knockout. Like, how protective of the UFC will the UFC be of O'Malley, given that there are these guys who might be a really, really difficult task who don't have the same big name?
I don't think that you can protect him from Merab any further. Right now, Merab is on that crazy win streak. And like you mentioned, in 5-round fights, we've seen him put his foot to the floor with the gas pedal and be able to hold his same gas tank for all 5 rounds. He's going to be a tough ask for anybody to beat. But that being said, I think that what Sean O'Malley brings to a guy like Merab are also a lot of problems. He's able to control distance really well. He's a pinpoint sniper, so if you make a lot of, I guess, reads and tells, that's something that Sean O'Malley will be able to be predictive with. So I think that Merab is certainly next in line, but I also do think that Chito Vera is a pretty tall order for O'Malley in his own right.
We're chatting with Aaron Bronstetter, head of UFC 299 in Miami, as you can tell. You had not as vibrant as an outfit as Sean O'Malley did when you guys chatted earlier. Very colorful and enthusiastic. So, you know, you step it up next time we chat. Co-main event, Poirier, of course, a rare time that he's an underdog, right? So this is, I think my question for you is, like, is this, how much does he have left in the tank, right? He's got a long history of fighting. This one of the only times he's an underdog. I'm wondering, like, what he has to prove from this one against a guy with, like, special forces background. Like, I'm really excited to watch him fight, because I haven't seen him, but I'm anticipating it to be kind of an intense one.
I think that's why he's the underdog, is because Benoit Saint-Denis has been so impressive since moving to lightweight. Didn't look great in his debut at welterweight, but since he's moved to lightweight, he's been an absolute force to be reckoned with. A durable fighter, somebody who's always going to bring the fight to a guy like Dustin Poirier, scheduled for five rounds. This is really going to tell us what Dustin Poirier has left in his career, because I think Poirier, the last couple of years, has had some great wins. Those two wins over Conor McGregor specifically are always going to be his calling card, and he's going to be set for life as a result of those. But I think Benoit Saint-Denis offers a lot of challenges. Young guy, still in his 20s. This is a tough fight for Dustin Poirier. I think that's why he's the underdog here.
Okay, it's also the UFC debut this weekend of Michael Venom Page, who's been in Bellator for a long time, been knocking guys out in Bellator for a long time. He goes up against Kevin Holland, two guys who are just dynamic strikers, I suppose. And I mentioned, you know, protecting Sean O'Malley, or the idea that you could protect only to a certain point. Well, you don't want to see a wrestler in there with Michael Venom Page. He is just a striker. And if you're going to throw a guy out there against him who's just going to wrestle him, well, that's not a return on investment, I don't think, if you're the UFC. So is it just that for MVP? Is it just going to be, hey, fun action fights like this one, get the most out of them, and make sure the UFC can continue to market him?
Yeah, I kind of hope so. Mm-hmm. I think that's where you put him in the best position to succeed. And if you've never heard of Michael Venom Page, I'm kind of jealous of you, because if you can go back and watch all of his fights, it's just highlight reel after highlight reel. This guy is like a movie star, a martial arts movie star, a video game character. You won't see any other fighter ever like Michael Venom Page and get a chance to see what he's able to do in there. It's magical. He's 36 years old now, and I think that he's going to have an interesting adversary in Kevin Holland, another guy who's kind of about the histrionics, likes to talk trash, likes to perform. That's what makes this fight so much fun. I think it's the perfect opponent for his debut.
Yeah, I think one of the words you used when you were tweeting about this one was a fellow eccentric. Like, as someone that I feel like I have no way of anticipating how this fight will go. And as you mentioned, someone that hasn't been able to see them fight much, this is kind of like a wild card for me. I don't even know how you can predict who's going to win this one, but it seems like maybe the most chaotic of fights on the card that night.
Yeah, it's an even money fight, and I think it's for the reasons that you laid out. You got two charismatic guys, two fighters that are very good at implementing their game plan, and it's just who's going to do it better than the other, and I think that's what it comes down to.
Okay, as mentioned, this is as deep as a card as you're going to see in the UFC, UFC 300 included, I would think, and that means you got former title challengers on the first few fights of the pay-per-view in Gilbert Burns and Piotr Jan. These are two former title challengers, or guys who are in title fights, were in title fights just a couple fights ago. If one of them has a second win, if one of them has another run towards a title, which one would you hedge your bet with?
I'd probably go with Piotr Jan. If you look at the track record, A, he's younger. B, I think there's two split decision losses in there, and they were both very close fights. The loss to Merab was a bad one. And he also had that fight against Aljamain Sterling where he was disqualified. I still think he has all the skills to be a championship-level fighter, and I think he has more time than Gilbert Burns in order to get back into the mix.
Okay, I just mentioned UFC 300. We do have a main event now. Last time we talked to you, I don't think we had the main event yet. It is Jamahal Hill versus Alex Pereira, light heavyweight title fight. We were talking about how, you know, there's an expectation with UFC 300. It's got to be big. It's got to be massive. It's got to maybe transcend a normal UFC show, even a UFC pay-per-view. So does UFC 100 featuring or headlined by Pereira and Hill do it justice?
Well, yes and no. I think the card from top to bottom is just so stacked that it's hard to overlook it. We're talking about 15% of the UFC's top 10 fighters are on this card across all divisions. It's loaded. But to what you're saying, I think that if you're looking for a headlining fight that's going to really grab the attention outside of the MMA bubble, it doesn't really have that. And I'm not really sure that that fight really existed outside of a Conor McGregor fight. So I think this fight card is going to be sold on the dearth of talent from top to bottom rather than a really juicy headliner. This fight likely would have headlined UFC 301 in Brazil 1 month later if it wasn't moved over to 300. So I think they were kind of out of options in terms of really big fights that were going to draw from outside of the MMA bubble.
We were chatting about this before we brought you on. Where does Miami rank in terms of places to host a UFC event? Obviously, Toronto was amazing. I know Vegas would probably be up there, but Miami seems to have that scene, the scene that you'd want to have a big fight night in.
Well, Miami is an awesome city. And the pay-per-view last year, they hadn't been to Miami in something like 20 years. Mm. they came and they just conquered this city. The amount of money that they brought to the city from both tourism, the gate, and they basically said, we're coming back here every year. This is one of my favorite fight cities now. I know this is only the second card that I've had the privilege of covering here, but I just love being in Miami and feeling the vibe. I think that this is going to be a staple on the UFC's calendar every single year.
Hopefully fans are in there early because there are a lot of good fights on the undercard. We're going to ask you for bets, best bets in a second. But if someone needs to, like someone wants to be, you know, enthralled by something early on, wants to get to their seat early, which fighter do you have pinpointed in the undercard that people should definitely invest their time in?
There's a new fighter on the roster. He's a heavyweight, Robles de Pana. And he is an Olympic Taekwondo fighter. I think his last three or four fights have totaled to be less than 1 minute in length, something like that. This guy is just absolutely obliterating everybody. And now he's making his UFC debut against Josh Parisian early on in the card. I'm very curious to see what he brings to the table for this particular fight card and to the UFC in general. The heavyweight division always needs talent. It's always a pretty thin division. This is a guy that can move up very quickly.
I wouldn't assume you have that one to go the distance. But what do you have for your best bets for $2.99 for us? Because last time we made off pretty well when you shared some. So thank you.
Yeah, this is a tough card to pin down because I think that there are a lot of pretty big favorites, like the aforementioned De Pana. Like, I think you can put him in some parlays. I'm pretty confident Sean O'Malley wins that fight, but I would take the over. I think if the over or under is 3.5, I think that fight does go over. And then I think in the co-main event, I'm looking at the over as well. Both fighters say this one's going to end early, but these guys are both super durable. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the over in the co-main event as well. So I'm starting to look at some overs in fights where the expectation is to go under, except for the aforementioned De Pana. Like you joked, this fight's not going the distance.
Because it's a tough one, I'll throw mine at you just to get your grade on it. I like Gilbert Burns as an underdog. Jack Della, last time he was out, kind of had trouble with someone who was definitely a step up, but not necessarily an elite fighter. Gilbert Burns is top of the game, has been there for a long time. I like Gilbert Burns plus money. Are you leaning the other side?
I like the way you think, because if you look at where this fight takes place, if it's on the feet, Gilbert Burns has probably the power advantage. The way that I think De La Maddalena wins that fight is by keeping the distance, using his volume, and just outpointing Gilbert. Because if this gets into sort of grappling exchanges, I think Gilbert's going to have a big advantage in that regard. That's a 50-50 fight, and in that kind of a situation, you take the underdog.
Yep, I agree. I think it passed the test.
Team Burns over here.
Enjoy your second event in Miami, Aaron. This is a lot of fun, and we'll do it again for UFC 300.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Make sure you check it out on Saturday on Sportsnet Plus, because this card is absolutely stacked.
Excited. It's going to be a good one. That's Aaron Brunstetter, of course, of Sportsnet. Yeah, I don't know how early we got to be there for Robles. Is his first name, I believe? Robles?
I believe so.
Maybe it's like the second or third fight up. But yeah, it's time to, you know, invest some time into the couch.
Robles.
Get there early and fire up Sportsnet Plus.
Yeah, this is all Saturday night. So want to get through the craziness of trade deadline. You just want to kick your feet up and watch people kick each other's brains out. UFC 299, Sportsnet's got you on Saturday night. Okay, so you've got Gilbert Burns. I love that you asked him, and I was just trying to gauge his reaction, and he was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
You're asking the pro about...
I think he was being nice.
I think he was being nice, but I know I'll ride with it.
No, I'm still playing with it. I mean, he didn't shoot it down.
No, it was...
He did offer a way in which the other guy would win, which was maybe a little bit...
it's called hedging your bets.
Yeah, maybe that's it. So I mentioned the deal back to the NHL trade deadline that I was most interested in today, Vladimir Tarasenko. You still have to give your opinion on the trade deadline or the trade deadline move we've seen today that may be most consequential.
I mean, look at what Colorado just did in their two moves, bulking up a bit. But I think Adam Henrique to Edmonton is going to be a really good fit. Like, their forward depth is incredible. He's obviously a veteran. He's well-loved. He's got experience. I think this team was already looking deep, but they were missing one piece. If, you know, one former Maple Leaf could score goals, that would help for them. But Adam Henrique would be a really nice addition for the Edmonton Oilers. I'm feeling like that's just the beginning for them, right? Like, this has been almost two seasons in one for the Oilers, right? That beginning part, they find that fortitude. Do they learn something? Have they grown? Well, kind of feels like they have when you look at what they've done in the last second half of the season so far. So Adam Henrik being added to Edmonton. I know it took a first, but salary retention as well. I was really impressed with that move. I did see Elliot just tweeted that Vegas has entered the Noah Hanifin conversation.
Mm.
He said, not sure where all this is going, but Vegas has entered the Noah Hanifin conversation. So we're talking about those big teams in the West getting better.
Someone's got to check their books. Like, how is that even possible? That is Vegas.
LTIR.
I mean, I'm interested in Edmonton, obviously, but this seems like the move, right? And this is the move for Edmonton. Was it the right move? I mean, again, I would kind of lean on the surface. Hey, they need a little bit more help on the back end, making sure that they're solidifying things.
We know
things
all
in
the back end help is like, you know, there's not really, there's one or two major needle movers, right?
Sure. Noah Hanifin probably not going to work there given the Alberta connection, but this team was also, in addition to maybe having some questions, and maybe there are less questions, they were a middle six forward or a top six forward short, frankly. Mattias Janmark was playing on the second line yesterday for the Edmonton Oilers' big win over the Boston Bruins, by the way. But Adam Henrik fills a void, and it knocks someone else down, Mattias Janmark in this case, to a third line. Sam Carrick also enters the chat on the bottom six, and all of a sudden you have 14 forwards that can play on this team, maybe 15. Like, they run really, really deep up front. And Ken Holland did mention, hey, they might add a seventh defenseman before this is all over. So Edmonton has every reason in the world to bulk up and to spend that first round draft pick. And I think Adam Henrik is like, he could play on one of three lines for you. He's very versatile. He can do a lot of things. I'm not like as in tune with where his game's at because, listen, who's watching the Anaheim Ducks right now? And it's hard to really gauge given how bad that team is. But Adam Henrik is a guy who can do a lot of things. And the Oilers now look like they've completely solidified that forward group.
For the aforementioned Anaheim Ducks, he's got 42 points in 60 games.
That's pretty good.
That's probably the only 42 points
that
they've scored.
And he's not playing with Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl any of those top guys with Edmonton. Yeah, so it might be a change of scenery that could get even more from him.
All right, last year there was 19 trades on deadline day.
Didn't feel like it.
Feels like they might have to press pause to be able to beat that number, but nonetheless, exciting stuff. Of course, our second half here will be focused on Maple Leafs, who are hosting the Buffalo Sabres tonight. That's up on Sportsnet right after us. And, of course, on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Justin and I will have your intermissions for that as well. But let's do some quick best bets before we take a break and shift to Leafs focus. I'm going to do a Toronto parlay for you. PWHL Toronto, we as in me, ranked them at the bottom of the league beginning on, and you were on board with that because they were the worst.
Tough start.
They were the worst team in the league. They've now won 7 straight games, and they are a brand new team. So I'm going to parlay them with the Maple Leafs. Maple Leafs have not been traditionally good against the Buffalo Sabres. They've lost both this season, and they were pretty bad games. But I'm going to parlay both of them to win. That's plus one and 180. But I'm also giving you Leafs and Sabres over 7.5 on the alternative line because goals, 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 goals. Stick around for the second half of the show when we give you the reasoning behind that. But this one's probably going to hit the over, so I'm giving you an alt over to win you more money.
Yeah, over the last 2 years, these teams have played each other 7 times, averaging 8.4 goals per game. Last 2 years.
Yeah,
Sabres,
I think the puck's going in the net tonight.
So, it's probably a pretty safe bet to play the over and even the alt line. I said earlier, I'm playing the Bucks and I'm playing the Panthers, and every time I play something other than them, it's not going so well. So I'm going to play the Bucks again. They're in Golden State, plus 3. Give me 3 points. Giannis returns. I like the Bucks at Golden State. And if we're looking at some reaction to trade deadline or trying to get ahead of a move in the NHL futures market, 11-1 the Avalanche today to win the Stanley Cup, and they freed up money in addition to adding Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker for Bowen Byram and Ryan Johansson in two separate deals. Excuse me. They're probably a better team, and they look like they're going to add more. So I imagine this will drop Avalanche to win the Cup. If you want to get ahead of it, if you still can, 11-1.
The Avs, they're looking good. All right, I know Kipper and Bourne were just mentioning Sidney Crosby's name before we jumped in there. I don't know if it was towards the Avalanche, but I'm always down for those rumors, folks. So,
I thought you were going to give me some news there.
No. Gosh, no. But if there's any rumblings and mumblings about Sidney Crosby and Nathan MacKinnon, I'm always here for it. We'll take a quick break, and we'll talk Leafs, Sabres on the other half as we tee up tonight's game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and on Sportsnet. That's next on The Fan pregame.